Why are you laughing?
You have any tokens for the machine down the street?
Welcome to the Why Are You Laughing podcast!
I figured I'd get a good jam going for my guests here.
I love you.
Tuesday, the 3rd of August already. Holy cow. Here we go. The intensity.
I wanted love. I needed love.
What a great tune.
Welcome back to the podcast. Here we go. Why Are You Laughing? Episode 83. Holy cow. What's up, Caleb Murray? How we doing, bro?
Man, 83 episodes, man. That's
crazy. You believe
great.
That? Like, I mean, I look back at this whole journey, and I'm like, how did a year already go by? That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, who would have thought, honestly?
Is that when you started doing this, like a year ago?
Yeah. Yeah, January of 2020.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is nuts.
A year and some change, I guess. Yeah, it's hard to believe, man. I you were one of the first.
Yeah, yes, that's true. Yeah.
How you doing, brother?
What's in a recliner, you
what's
know?
Going on? You're looking good. You're feeling good.
Feeling great, you know. Yeah, I've been healthy. Got some big news.
Yeah, I was able kidding.
Oh, I was gonna say I was able to lower my car insurance.
Oh, with Geico.
No, actually, real talk, I was getting gypped on my car insurance, and the other day, they were able to lower my yearly significantly. So
good. That's amazing. That just happened to me, actually. Well, once I turned 25, it went down, like, from 80-something to 50, to 50 bucks, and I was like, wow, that's awesome. Because I mean, you know, I got an 03 Corolla, so it's like, it's not like I'm rolling in a Mercedes or anything like that.
I was going to say, I got to get that insurance.
Yeah, seriously. Stay fine, Doug.
I just got a 2019 Subaru, and with that, my insurance was jacked up to about $300 a month.
Skyrocketed.
Crazy.
Wow.
Now we're in like the 180 area. So
right. That's good.
For real.
So just as like a service announcement for those who are wondering why I sound like garbage right now, I was just telling Caleb that I'm kind of on the tail end of this. I don't even know what to call it. It's not a cold. It's just like I have a sore throat, but everything else is tremendous. I feel great. So other than a sore throat, I'm fine. I'm hoping that that's the least of my worries.
It's just the plague, guys. Don't worry.
But I'm doing everything I can do. I'm drinking my pineapple juice. I'm drinking some water, you know.
Yep.
But I still come here for you people. That's what I do.
That pineapple juice can makes you look like a giant.
Mm. I know. This thing is tiny. I don't know why they don't make them in like regular size cans. Like maybe something like this. Liquid death, if you never liquid had it. Death.
I did. I tried it once because I was like, I got to see what the hype's all about.
And, I know, right? And it's just
it's
like
water.
It's water. I don't even know why I bought it, but I like water in a can. I don't know why. It's
might
just
as well look cool while you're drinking.
Yeah, you right. That should be the motto for it. Look cool while you're drinking.
Move over, Poland Springs.
So you kind of had a big drop the other day. Like, talk to me about this whole thing. Talk to me. Your EP, by the way, tremendous. So good. I mean, like, my EP came out and it was dog water, but this is going to be
False.
No, dude, it was great. Fantastic. I loved it. 1 a.m. It's a banger.
I appreciate that. That one took the longest to get down. And then by the time we were done, we were like, wow, we're at 6.5 minutes. Like,
wow.
Like, yeah. What are we doing here? No, it's I'm so thrilled about it because this is a project that 20-year-old Caleb wanted to come out with.
Right.
And I just haven't had the chance. Now I'm 23. I was able to finally get it together. Yeah, it's just funny how it all worked out. I was originally supposed to record with Jordan, with our friend Jordan.
Yeah.
And then just some life things got in the way, held off the project for a little bit. And then I was at a wedding and my buddy Carter, who is fantastic at mixing and mastering, he's like unreal. He's like, you want to work on something? And I'm like, sure, let's do it. So we set aside two Sundays and we cranked it out.
Good for you, bro. Wow, yeah. Two Sundays.
Yep.
That's it?
That's it.
Hard to believe, man, because that, like, there's so much that goes into, like, people don't understand what it takes to actually sit down, write something, record it, you know, mix and master it, do the whole thing. They think it's just like a quick process, but really, like, how long did it take him to mix and master that whole thing?
That took a while.
Yeah.
I think from our last recording session to when it finally hit Spotify and iTunes was a period of like almost a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it took him a while. I think the good thing was, though, the writing and the idea of how I wanted everything was already in my head. So that's like 90% of it right there. All I had to do was show up, lay it down. And it was a fairly quick process on my end. Just because, you know, these are songs I've had in my back pocket since I was, like I said, 20, like 19, 20 years old. So
you've been holding on to these for a while then.
A long time.
Wow, yeah. That's great, bro.
Yep. Wow,
that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, well, it shows, because it's always good to have something prepared. You know, when you go into the studio and you're forced to, like, rework what you have already had in mind and you're not 100% certain on it, then it's going to take twice as long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
And that's the cool thing, too, is, you know, I'm used to a band setting.
Right, as am I.
Right, but it's strange to just go in, not have any other voices or influences, or hey, we should do things this way. You can just go in and just put out what you want to put out.
Exactly.
And it's like it's kind of nice in a way. You don't have to worry about other varying opinions and stuff like that. It's
no, you could just go with the flow and do exactly what you want.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, that's why I like doing the solo stuff. It's like I have, so my show on this upcoming Thursday, which, you know, I announced on a podcast that I'm releasing on Thursday, so it's stupid. So it's like, if you hear about the show on Thursday, then it's already passed, so I'm sorry. But
is that the one that you put on Instagram?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
That, like, and I'm praying that this thing is gone so I can actually sound normal.
Yeah.
And it's because it's so aggravating, dude. Because this is not the first time that this has happened.
Yeah.
Soda was performing at the deli that I used to work at years ago. I think it was one of our first shows with Subby. And I sounded terrible. And I'm drinking these, like, by the tens.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get better, trying to, like, sound good. And it was just hot garbage. You know, I sounded bad. You know, I think Sully forgot the bass amp. And then the next thing you know, we're playing on, like, a hill. And you see Subby's Tom fall off his drum set and just roll down the hill right in the middle of the show. And I'm howling. I'm laughing, but it's like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, what is gonna go wrong next? This is
like, how do you even like play through that?
I know, and it's. But I'll tell you what, I got more compliments from that show than ever. Like I had people coming up to me, even though you know it's garbage. Yeah. It's kind. It's sometimes it's nice to have people come up and be like, "Hey, you did okay." It's like, I know I didn't, but thank you for trying.
Well, I mean, it's nice too. Like, if it's a good crowd, and you know they're on your side, and if you mess up, you know, everyone knows the deal. Everyone knows that, like, the Tom just rolled down the hill. So it's like, it's one of those types of shows.
It's that type of night.
Yeah.
But to go into this next show on Thursday is like, I'm excited to get my sea legs back. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm excited to relearn things, as I've stated previously 1,000 times. And you know what? It's like, I'm in the frame of mind of, I don't care if there's 100 or 2 people there.
Yeah.
I'm there to play music and to, get prepared for what's coming. Because I got a lot of projects planned.
And, really?
Having the documentary coming up, I want to be ready for that because I am dropping an EP for that project specifically. Oh, nice. So I can't wait to do that. But anyway, enough about me. Back to your EP. So I want to ask you a couple questions. So when you go into a project like this, because as you said and stated previously, as you were in a band for a couple of years, as was I. So what was it like going into the studio by yourself and sort of, laying down those tracks? Obviously, you're excited about it, and obviously you can stay in your lane. But what was the difference between that?
It was, I think one of the biggest things was there wasn't any distractions, really. There was less to set up. When you're in the band setting, you have multiple instruments, you have a whole kit to set up. And when we were doing it with the band, everyone played their instrument at the same time. We played it live and just recorded the whole thing.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, myself and Carter, the guy that did the producing, we just laid it down one instrument at a time. We said, all right, we're going to do guitar and vocals next, lead guitar. Then we're going to lay down the bass, and then we're going to do the drums. And by the time we got to the last song, we had it down to a science. It was just like clockwork.
Nice.
Yeah, it was, as I mentioned, it was just a lot more freeing. It was just very, it was a good experience. I'm glad I was able to do this on my own and prove to myself that I could put something out, be able to play drums on a record, be able to play bass and guitar and actually have it be a cohesive project.
Oh, so you did all of the instruments.
I did. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome, man. I did all, Holy cow. Good for you. That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that because having camaraderie and sort of firing on all cylinders with a producer is the most important thing that you can have. So if you're saying that you guys were clicking by the end of the whole thing, that's awesome.
Oh yeah. And I'm probably going to say this a million more times, but hats off to Carter. Cause I mean, he would add stuff or he would say things that at first I'm like, what do you like? I don't know if that makes sense, but it would make sense later. Like, he's like, what if we add like waves, like a waves sound effect to this? And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, just wait, just hold on. Right. And then he puts it in and I'm like, oh, that completes the song. Like, that's exactly
things what that you need. And I will never think about.
Yeah. He's like, hold on, let me, put some crickets in this or something.
You're like, what? This building that's about to collapse, we're going to record that and throw it in.
Yeah. The Tom rolling down a hill.
My word. That would have been an amazing soundbite. I would have put that in this podcast. Hands down. Be like a joke that didn't land. You just hear clink, 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 clink. Hilarious. So what made you do this little project by yourself?
Well, the whole thing is kind of a time. It captures a time in my life personally when all these songs came about. I mean, it's the 4 songs are a whole narrative of basically leaving home and going somewhere else, southbound, the song 1 AM is kind of the thought process of leaving. like when your thoughts kind of go nuts at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., you start thinking about crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And then the track Southbound is like telling close relatives and, you know, people that you love that you're just going to leave for a little bit. Early Rising Blues is the process of carrying out that plan. And the track When It Comes Around is kind of after all that's finished and you come back to your senses, when this thought comes back around, how you process it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It was a very personal project, and I'd kind of held back in putting these songs out as part of a bigger album because I wanted it to be a specific little story, kind of.
Right.
So I'm happy that I was able to put that out the way that I wanted, and it came out just the way I wanted. So,
dude, it's so great to hear you, you know, like address those things and address them the way that you did. Because when I was writing, you know, I didn't know I was writing for an EP. Like, I had no intentions at all of putting something together by myself. Like, it was just, it happened when I was writing Reasons. Like, I had these batch of songs that I didn't know what I was going to do with. And eventually the thought kind of rolled in my mind, well, you know, the band's on a little break, you know, maybe I could do this. And I kind of was like, I don't want to do it. But when I started writing Reasons, that pushed me over the cliff. Mm-hmm. It was like, all right, you have to do it. There's certain songs and there's certain lyrics that tell you what to do even though you don't know you want to do it, if that makes any sense. It's like, when I was writing that song, I'm saying, this is completely new. This is nothing that I've done before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always trying to do stuff like that. I'm always trying to have that one song that separates itself from the rest.
Yeah.
Whether it's lyrics, whether it's, you know, riffs, you know, theme, you know, whatever it may be, that's what pushed me in the direction of doing an EP.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it puts you out of your comfort zone to try something else.
Yeah, and it's so true. It's almost like once you get over that cliff or once you get over that hill, the EP or the project kind of gets a motor of its own, and it kind of propels itself forward. And you just it motivates you to keep going with a thought or to keep going with a state of mind that you want to convey. And I mean, I know for you, like, your songwriting ability is, I think, really shined through on that EP, and then even your vocal ability too on Over.
Yeah,
I think you hit like some note at the end that I was like, "Whoa!"
The story behind that song, is crazy. Like, I wrote that probably, let's pretend, 2016 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I had a project with Abram that I was doing. Like, I think we still plan on finishing it, you know. Excuse me. Trying to find the timing to like get together and do things is just ridiculous right now.
Yeah.
And it has been for years, because it's like I was always in the band and he was always working and doing things. And he was coming out with his own stuff, too. Like, he had Monument, Mountain Monument, I think is what the name of it was. And then Ruby, his EP came out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but I had an idea that I wanted to do, like, maybe a little concept album. Not necessarily a story that makes sense, but sort of around the same basic theme, mm-hmm, of being a kid and trying to find a voice. When I wrote that song, I knew that at that point, I was never going to be overshadowed by Just Another Day or Signals Over the Air ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not going to know Sam from Soda. or Just Another Day, they're going to know him for that.
Yeah.
And that song has always been like one of my all-time favorites to play. And it helped me to learn a new way to write music.
Mm.
Like, I think of the documentary, I'll probably talk about that song. Like, there are certain things that I want to talk about. And, you know, a couple songs that really have changed the course of what I how I write.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of them. That was such an incredible song to write.
Are you going to be trying to sing that one on Thursday?
I'm going to try.
That one's going to push your limit.
I mean, the reality is they're paying me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can work around that. Yeah. I could try, because I've been playing things in a lower octave, so I don't have to really try and sing as high.
Yeah.
But I think by Thursday I should be pretty much out of it. I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I'm getting better.
I keep anyway. Telling yourself that. I'm getting better.
Waking up in the middle of the night last night, bro. I was like, oh my God, this thing's never going to go away.
Yeah. Man.
But anyway, talk to me about this EP. Like, are you gonna try to perform it in any way, shape, or form, or do you have a certain plan or something that you want to do as far as live performance goes, or is it not even a thought right now?
I honestly haven't really thought too much about like live performances and stuff. I mean, it's so hard to tell like where we'll be even a month from now. You know, things are so
seriously.
So I'm not so much banking on that. If I could, I mean, I'm playing with a group of guys right now that are very talented.
And
if we have an opportunity to play live, we're mainly just doing covers, but I would love to play a song or two live. I think especially like Early Rising Blues is a song that can translate very well live because it's just a jam.
Yeah, absolutely.
That and Southbound, you know,
so good.
1 a.m. might be a little tough to pull off live, and when it comes around was kind of it's kind of more just like a solo thing. It's just me and my
right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would love to get some stuff going live, but it was more important to me just to get this out there, you know, because it was bugging me. It was stuff I've had in the noggin for a few years.
Right.
So honestly, I don't even know what to do now. It's like, man, I've had these songs for so long. Now they're out there. It's like I got to think of something else now. So
okay, so your writing process is more focused on like how you want it arranged. You like you take more time with your writing.
Yeah. I mean, I have, you know, I have like a small handful of songs that I don't necessarily want to build a whole concept around. They're kind of just little throwaway songs here, there. But I thrive on albums with a purpose or EPs with a purpose, you know.
Right.
Like even with this one, I was considering just throwing in a cover song, like a blues tune.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, it's not going to fit the overall message or the overall feel. So right. I'm like, I'll just leave it out, you know, save that for another day.
Yeah, and I had considered that with Over because, mm-hmm. you know, the Belief EP was meant to do something, you know, like I said, something that I hadn't done. And, you know, Over, it was supposed to be like for another project. There is another version of the song that's actually recorded and finished.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the version that will be going on the album that I do with Abram, the EP or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, okay.
So that song was an acoustic version of the song that I had already recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just not... I thought that when I was recording the other songs, I was like, this will be sort of a preview for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be a preview that's not overpowering. You know what I'm saying? Like, it'll be...
Right.
It'll be what it meant to me. I'm mumbling at this point because my throat's killing me. But it would mean that it's going to start something new. So that's why I put it on there. Those songs, I never written anything like that before, Caleb. It was all a shock to me, as it was to everybody, that I was putting something out by myself.
Yeah. And I think the gravity of what it was that came out, I was like, oh, Sam came out with an EP. It's going to be a, you know, I was thinking somewhere in the ballpark of Soda.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is, hold on, let me sit down.
I know, right? And it's funny, dude, because when I was in my first band, and we all kind of parted ways because my drummer ended up moving and, you know, my singer fell off the face of the planet. It's a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I just got started and now it's all over. And I just was like, no, I have to go out and try, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's when I started playing shows profusely. It was like every Thursday I was at this place called Fritz Fry's.
Yeah.
Because they would give me food and stuff like that, and I'd be able to challenge myself to try and write a new song every other week to perform and, you know, get a feel for what it's like to be by yourself. And it may be challenging, but at the same time, it's like it's needed if you want to continue to work and rework your songwriting.
You know? Right. Yeah, I think that's something that I need to cultivate a little bit more. I will go months without writing a single song.
Yeah.
And then when it hits me, I write a few songs.
Yeah.
But just to get the brain muscles going again and just to get everything working right. I think it is good to kind of, like you said, every other week or so, like try and come up with something.
Right.
And even if it's trash, it's like you learn from it.
Yeah, exactly. You learn from it.
Yeah.
I had a song. I can't even believe I'm about to tell this story. I was messing around. I was in Florida with Ross, who was... He is my best friend and my original drummer for my first band. And we always messed around with, like, comedy songs or stupid songs, and wrote a song called That's Not Mayonnaise. And I ended up performing it one night. Just because one of my buddies that's close, he lives here, he's like, you gotta perform that song, it's great. I'm like, really? Really? Out of all the stuff that I'm writing, this is the song that you want me to play? I played it. I'm sure the recorded version is around somewhere, but I don't think it'll ever come out.
That'd be awesome if it's like kicking around YouTube somewhere or something.
I know, right? Someone's got it.
Would you say that's like the worst song you've ever written?
Oh, no, 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 no. I remember... I hate this story, but I will tell it. I had the hots for this one chick, okay? Mm-hmm. She was in some part of New Hampshire. I won't say where. Not that it matters because this is going way back, but...
Drop the address.
Yeah, right. She's located here. She's a millionaire now. No. You know, I really like this girl, and I couldn't get her a present for her graduation party. I'm 18. I don't have money. You know, all the money I have is going to partying, my car, you know, other bills that I'm paying for me and my mom, because I was still living with her at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I always am trying to do something creative. I went into the studio, Caleb.
Wow.
And I recorded this song for her. It's the only time I ever recorded a song to try to get a girl to go out with me. And it was the worst bombing I've ever have experienced. She didn't even say anything.
Really?
She was just like, wow, thanks. And then I talked to one of her friends like later on. She goes, yeah, she was kind of weirded out. It's like, what do you mean? I try to do something nice.
Yeah.
And it's like, she misunderstood some of the lyrics, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I didn't say anything creepy. But but it's just like, some people are very particular. You know.
I think all guys at that age make really stupid choices.
Oh, and yeah. I got a just thousand of those stories I forgot.
We just don't know how to do it right at that age at all.
No. So. And, you know, I should have known better. Yeah. But, like I said, I'd never recorded a song for a girl. I just thought she would like it because I went out of my way. And I went into a professional studio. Like, wow. This wasn't like me with an iPhone at my house. This is me going to a friend of mine who is older. He doesn't like recording, but he was just like, yeah, come on. Come right in. Because it was me. You know, we were friends. Mm-hmm. And I actually recorded it. I got it on CD. And I gave it to her. And, you know, as much as it didn't work, we still remain friends. And, you know, I got a story out of it, and I know what not to do next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I can't top that. That's,
ladies and gentlemen, if you think that that's going to work, you are way out of your league.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, man.
But, grand gesture of romance.
At least you make an appearance, you try, you know, you throw a concept out there. It's like Thomas Edison didn't invent the light bulb in one try, okay? It's like there are a lot of different things that can be done that either they work or they don't.
Yeah.
But if you don't go out and give it a shot, you're never going to know. You're never going to know. And that's what I appreciated about your EP was that I'm so proud of you because you're such a powerhouse on stage, man. Like, for people who haven't seen you live, they have no idea what they're in for. Like, your voice is so unique. Your presence on stage is incredible. Your guitar playing skills are completely out of this world that I could never imagine to have. And to have you focus that, you know, sort of power and intention into a record, I was so excited for you. And I cannot congratulate you enough on this EP, bro. It's fantastic. Seriously. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
I really appreciate it. And I think that's what made this so great is that I was able to just let go with the intro and with the outro to 1 a.m., I could just rip, you know, just really get into my own head with some pentatonic work. And then with like Early Rise and Blues towards the end, I could just let go completely and just start going.
Absolutely.
But I will say I feel like the biggest hack in the world because It's just minor pentatonic scales. That is what I have built everything that I do on, is just minor pentatonic scales, and it's gotten me this far. But
dude, it's, you know, my brother actually showed me this song, and I was kind of hesitant when he showed me. Because I don't generally listen to this type of music, but he sent me a song by Tyler Childers, and he's like a folk sort of, you know, backyard.
Yeah.
I don't want to say hick, but I mean, like, his songs are very like old timey, and I never really got into that stuff, but when he showed me, I was just like, man, this guy really put it out on the line. And the things that he was talking about was what got my attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could look at Tom Waits. The guy sounds like three pigeons that just got shot out of the sky, and he's a millionaire. You know, it's like,
oh my goodness.
It's like, this is a guy who could just scream on stage and it would not change a thing.
Did you ever see his interview when he's like, my mother was a exhaust manifold and my father was a tree, something like that. And like, he sounds like an exhaust manifold. Oh, but anyway, so.
Oh my god! No, please! It's a podcast, dude. We do what we want. That's so funny. Yeah, but I mean, I had an open mind. I was like, because you know, for lack of a better word, when you have older siblings, it's kind of hard to relate to them on some sort of level. You know, me and my brother, we, who I love to death. You know, I hope he listens to this podcast. This episode anyway, and understands that, like, when he showed me that, we stayed up till 3 a.m. that night just talking. Mm-hmm. Talking about music, talking about life, you know, whatever. But to have an open mind and to see what people are trying to do, you know, people trash on Greta Van Fleet. Oh, they sound like Zeppelin. Oh, they sound like da-da-da. Yep, who cares?
Yeah.
They're throwing a concept out there that is working for them.
Yeah, and frankly, like, not a lot of other people are doing it, right? You know?
Right. So you know, when Miles showed me that song, I was like, I dig it. I dig what the guy's trying to do. So, you know, back to the scale thing, it's like, we do what works for us, for what we like.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Corey Reynolds and I always talk about content and how if you're doing something creative and if you're doing it for yourself, that should be the end of it. That should be all you need to just move forward.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, it's so true. I mean, you know, whenever I kind of get down on myself for feeling like I'm not getting outside of my own box, I just think of like a lot of the blues masters and stuff like that. It's like each one of them had a few signature riffs or little chord progressions that they liked. And they would just play them in different keys and sing different lyrics over them. But at the end of the day, it's really kind of like the same stuff. It's just their story over those chord progressions. It's their story over those riffs.
Absolutely.
That's what makes it genuine and real. So,
dude, Led Zeppelin has a song called You Shook Me.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the greatest live performances I've ever heard. It's a song where it has that bluesy riff, but Zeppelin just puts their spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they told a story. You know, it's which, like
which live performance was it specifically?
I believe I hope I'm getting this right, and don't attack me on the internet, but I believe it's from their deluxe edition of it's the one where the Zeppelin's falling.
Oh, Zeppelin 1?
Like, yes.
Like their first one?
Yes, the first one. It's a deluxe edition.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not even be a live performance. I may be getting that completely wrong too, but I don't think that I am.
Either way, no, yeah, I've heard of it, but I mean,
dude, it's.
I want to check it out.
You know, Jimmy Page is a god.
Yeah.
When it comes to that sort of stuff, it's like he has his own style, and again, his own spin on doing that sort of thing. It's like. People don't understand, these songs have been done to death.
Yeah.
You know, it's like sometimes you just can't carry the spread. You have to try to put your own spin and flavor to something is not an easy thing.
I mean, I think especially like something what they were doing, like they came out in the 60s/70s. At that point, blues originals have been like, kind of like you said, have been redone
yeah.
and redone the same way over and over again by the same people. And it's like, kind of like you said, they just electrified it and totally kind of switched things around, turned things on their head.
Yeah.
And they were able to meld old blues with the future of rock and roll.
Seriously. I mean,
amazing.
You know, I look at Angus Young, you know, mm-hmm. he does that duck walk, and I seen it live. I seen it at Gillette Stadium in front of 65,000 people. He doing the duck walk at 60 something years old, you know, to continue to pay homage to Chuck Berry like that.
Mm-hmm.
It warms my heart. It's mm-hmm. like, even after all these years, you're still putting on the schoolboy outfit, you know, dancing on stage. I hope I'm that agile at 60. I hope I am. I mean, that's an incredible thing. And they're not stealing it. They're just paying a tribute to those who were before.
Yeah, because if anyone asks, you know, they'd be the first
to say. They'd be the first to tell them. Yeah, exactly. It's like, people get mad at me. It's like, oh, wait, you know, when are you going to write another punk album? You're going to do this. You're going to do that. It's like, I don't know. I'll do whatever I feel I want to do. It's like, do you think that I go up on stage these days and that I'm not one of, if like thousands, to go up and play the same three chords? It's like, I get it. I get it. But mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop trying to reinvent or, you know, remember who I am.
Yeah.
Punk is my thing. That's what I do. You know, it's like, and you, like we just talked about, eventually you're going to get to the end of the hallway where everything swings around to the first people that did it.
Mm-hmm. Always.
It always happens. And like I said, you're not stealing it. You're not trying to forget them. You're just trying to do your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. Sometimes that that fails.
What are you giggling at, Theodore Brown? Huh?
Yeah, I remember. I'm going to call this unintentional influencing because I came up with a chord progression that I really liked, and I said, "I'm going to make a song out of this." And my dad came downstairs. And he's like, "What are you playing?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's this new chord progression." He's like, "Caleb, that's Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus." And I'm like, come on. Like, that just, oh. I'm like, you're right. You're right.
But, that just torpedoed your dreams.
Yep. Try to be original.
Oh, my word.
Party in the USA.
Hey, party on, bro. I mean, you're going to be sitting there with Pharrell and Corey with a guy with a black robe on telling you you got 15 years for stealing songs. Oh, man. Poor Miley Cyrus, bro. She never recovered. Disney Channel really screwed her.
Yeah. That's the story, though. Her everything going on with Britney Spears, you know.
Oh my God, poor Britney Spears. Let's leave that woman alone. Sheesh. You know, they're attacking somebody who really is an original.
Yeah.
Who do you know that's like Britney Spears besides all these new people that are trying to be like her on the top 40 like, radio?
At the time, who was
at
like
that Britney time? Spears. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like people forget that NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and Boys to Men, you know, it's like all these groups came way before the Harry Styles of today, okay? And these guys, they did it well. They had a flavor. Again, some people mimic, and there's a difference between mimicking and trying to put your spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people try to copy. It's like, and sometimes they just do it intentionally. They're like, oh, what works? This works. Let's do this. It's like, you try to be an original if you really, really want to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, which is exactly what you did with this album, or EP, rather, as far as I'm concerned, bro. You know, I can't say it enough. You really did tremendously.
I do appreciate it. No, I mean, I'm just glad everything I put out in the past, even with the band, there was always something about it. I really just was like, ah, you know, I wish we could have fixed this or done this.
Right.
With this, you know,
you're in control.
I'm happy the way it turned out. You know, could it have been better? Sure. I mean, it always could have been better.
Everything
I guess
can always be better. Yeah.
I am very happy with the way it turned out, and I'm glad people, you know, are able to enjoy it now. So.
I am too, man. It's like, because I know how many people know that you're talented just by the people that come up to me and they're like, who is that guy? Like, especially when we played the Ware show in Mass, people were coming up to me going like, who was that that was playing Wasabi? And I'm like, that's my friend Caleb Murray. That's the savage of death that comes up and just melts your face completely with his guitar strings.
I gotta say though, I don't know if I will ever be able to match that energy that I had that night. I don't know what got into me, but right before I was about to go on, I was so amped up. I was, dude, like, man, I'm gonna just go up and rip.
Yeah.
And I did. And then I hope I can match that energy again one day, but we'll see.
I'll tell you why that night was so great. Okay. Sebastian stole my heart that show. Like, he just completely, the fact that he was willing to go and be that sort of force of nature behind you was so awesome. Like, you guys together was a perfect match in my mind. I was like, that's crazy.
And I'm grateful to him because the stuff he had to do was not hard. It was like, you know, it was basic, like.
Right, exactly. But he'll never be that.
Yeah.
He'll never, you know, be that. That's what's so great about him.
Yeah. You know, he's used to doing these fancy fills and whatnot. I'm just like, just play like a basic, like, halftime shuffle. He's like, okay, sure. And he just does it. And it's like, this is perfect. Thank you.
Hilarious. Yeah, man. He, that was a fun night to get together. Like, all of us, even though there was like weird pictures of old naked ladies around.
Really?
I didn't even. Venue. Oh my word. I'm so glad nobody went in the green room.
Oh my word.
But no, that show was super fun. I mean, and sometimes you just get those nights where you are ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I've ever said this publicly, but I used to feel that way as a feature act. I used to feel that way as an opener for, you know, a lot of these festivals that I would play because, you know, in between Just Another Day in Soda, I was doing my solo stuff. And yeah. So I would go up there and, you know, it's like you got nothing to lose, really. You do, but you don't. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it was like, it got to that point where, and I hate tooting my own horn about this, but you wouldn't be able to follow me.
Mm-hmm.
It got to such a level, Caleb, where like I was so pumped to get on stage and I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took a long time, don't get me wrong, but sometimes things just fire on all cylinders where you get it. You're like, this is clicked.
Yeah. And that's why I totally understand, like, you know, bands like AC/DC, right, that are playing Gillette. They're older. They're in their 60s and 70s or whatever. And it's like, that must never get old, you know? Because we get that feeling playing in front of, you know, 100 people or so. They get 65,000, and it's like that must be the best feeling every night, being able to just play to those people, you know?
Yeah, like the biggest fans in the world. I'll never forget that show. I'll never forget that. Like, first of all, to go to something with my dad and, you know, have, you know, little, full disclosure, we weren't really, I don't want to say compatible, but we just didn't agree on a lot of things growing up.
Yeah.
And when I turned 18, I started figuring things out. I started doing this or that, and I would go ask him for advice. And like, we would just get into these in-depth conversations, and we got closer. And, you know, and then my, this concert came up, and I was like, I should ask my dad if we could, if he wants to go. And it was just him and me.
Mm-hmm.
We went, we drove. I've never seen him so happy. He's holding his phone like this, Caleb. He's like this.
Yeah.
The whole time, his mouth's just like, oh, my goodness. And he's not a big concert guy, but he was having a blast. And at one point, he whispers in my ear, he goes, I got to go to the bathroom so bad, but I'm not going anywhere.
You don't want to miss it. That's awesome.
You never do.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's those type of moments that, like, I love about music. Again, it connects people.
For sure. Yeah. Who else was playing that night?
I don't know.
Did they have like an opener?
They did, but they sucked. They were from Vegas. I don't know. They thought they were Johnny Macho. They went up there with leather on. And, again, trying to be AC/DC or Andrew Dice Clay. Mm-hmm. It's just like they didn't have their own thing. But, you know, at that point, it doesn't matter because you're not in charge.
Right. Yeah.
AC/DC likes them, or at this point, I wonder if they even do like them, or if they're just like, yeah, whatever.
Or if it's like someone on their label that management is like, just bring them on tour with you.
Yeah, clearly.
Like, you hate these guys, but okay.
And it's sad because it never used to be like that. You would have bangers for feature acts. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember, so I have a friend, okay, he lives here. And he goes to Swansea, which is like the next town over.
Yeah.
And good friend of the buddy who I recorded the song for the girl. Anyway, yeah. So when he was 18, he opened up for Bob Seger.
Wow.
This is before he had the Silver Bullet Band. This is before anything.
Oh, okay.
But it was just like, in those days, you knew who were going to be killers on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tony still plays to this day. He still writes songs. He's got albums out, you know. He's 60-something years old. And you do it because you love it. You know, these guys, a lot of times they get on stage because they want to make money. If you go up there with the idea that you want to make money, you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
If you go up there with the idea that you want to send a message or do something for yourself, you will mm-hmm. succeed.
Yeah. There was a documentary I saw on songwriters. I don't know if you saw it or not. It's on Amazon Prime.
I didn't see that one. No.
I forget what it's called. It is so fascinating. And it's kind of along that same concept. It's documenting these songwriters that go to Nashville, because Nashville is like the Mecca
king of gangs.
For,
yeah, the Mecca
for songwriting, especially country songwriting. But it's all these people that are just saying that the first like 5, like 10 years that they were down there, they were just like scrounging. Like they had to, you know, work a full-time job still to even survive, and then try and get some songwriting done, get someone to bite.
Yeah.
Get some sort of contract going, like, but that kind of weeds the people out that are in it for the money, you know? But that I found really intriguing, that whole concept, you know? I have a lot of respect for songwriters, people that can put themselves in other people's shoes and then write it, you know?
I've told the story 1,000 times, but I saw James Taylor in 2012,
mm-hmm.
and the guy played 3.5 hours with no pick. You know, you got to have some titanium knickknacks to continue that for years and years and years and just play your songs. You have to have a solid love for what you do to go up there for that amount of time and play like that. I would never even dream of being able to play like that.
Yeah.
It's
for
like
3 hours. That's insane.
It's like, how? How? You know, like, it's unfathomable to me, you know. Mm-hmm. And but that's how I learned. That night specifically is how I learned acceptance, because Taylor Swift ended up coming out and being a guest star of that show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I think you were telling me that before.
And she played along with him, and it was like, okay, this is the mutual respect that I now have for Taylor Swift. To come out here and pay homage and, you know, to be a part of this show is super cool of her to do. That's so cool. You know, just like I said, like the people that I've met in music, like the road stories that I got, bro, that I could tell you, it's insane. It really, really is insane.
Man, love it.
So anyway, you're so you said you have a batch of songs that you're kind of working on a little bit or thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing now is I have a good relationship with Carter. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really so good.
You know, whenever I have something, I can just call him up and say, "Hey, let's lay this down," and more than happy to work with me. So it's
we'll have to put something together, you and me.
Yeah,
we should do something cool.
I would love to just sit down with you and just try to write stuff.
Yeah,
you
know, man, that would be great.
Get stuff going.
That would be great. I mean, I wish I was as articulate as you with music, because it's like I can't read anything.
I can't either, man.
Are you serious?
I can't read.
Oh, I never knew that about you.
Nothing. I used to read when I took lessons at like 12 years old.
Right. I remember when you talked to me about taking lessons before.
Yep. But those days are long gone.
Long gone. Yeah.
I can recognize notes if I'm playing the saxophone, because I was in band for so many years, and I know what a G note and a B note and a C note, all that stuff, what it looks like. But as far as translating it to guitar,
right?
There's nothing I can do there.
No, but. I mean it's. I look at people like Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
Plays by ear.
Yeah.
Has played by ear for, 60 years? You know, it's not about what you can and can't do. It's about what you're feeling.
Yep.
And sometimes you could just feel the music in a way where it translates into something great. So it's like, I never had an issue with me playing by ear. You know, you should just figure it out.
Yeah.
And in its own way, really, that I believe that that's a better way to do things, because it forces you to train your brain to be like, okay, let me try to remember where my hand goes here and what it sounds like here, you know? So you just sort of figure things out, and you know, if you read about it, you know, you're kind of cheating yourself almost. Mm-hmm.
I think it was John Mayer that said, whenever you're learning the guitar, he's like, you want to make sure you're not learning a song on the guitar, but you're learning how to play the guitar. Like how this song that you're learning, like, sure, you can learn the notes. How does it fit into the overall scheme of things? How does it fit into scales? How does it fit into chord progressions? The big picture of what you're actually learning. And, I know for myself, that's what I try and do. Like when I'm trying to learn, say I'm trying to learn a cover song, it's not so much learning every note. It's recognizing where this fits in. What key is it in? Right. What chords? You know.
It's the greatest feeling in the world. And especially like when you get on stage and you can actually do it live.
Yeah.
That's the best feeling on earth.
Yeah.
The best feeling on earth. You know, it's like, I tell this story all the time too, but when the best show that I ever played was Unauthorized, wasn't allowed to be up there. Unprepared. Nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely blew the roof off the building. It's like, again, people are going to attack me. I'm not trying to toot my own horn. But that night, I played Sound of Silence. All of it I learned on my own. And I leveled that room. I had one song to play.
Yeah.
And that's what I played. And it was just one of the most incredible nights of my life. I ate after, you know. It was a blast. It was a blast.
See, anyone that would attack someone for saying that, it's like, we can admit when we bomb, like, utterly, absolutely. Oh, so it's like,
those.
I think if we can do that, we can admit when we're really good.
Yeah, and exactly.
We're able to admit both sides of the spectrum. It's
word. I've had nights where I've eaten it and I've talked about it on this show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same. Exactly. But unfortunately, there's so many people out there that are not like that.
I know.
But
we got to wrap this thing up, bro. Caleb, you're the greatest, bro. I'm so happy to always have you on. You're gifted. You're a lovely person, and I'm glad that you always come on the show. You come in the clutch, you come through, and everyone's going to love this EP. And if you don't, then I'm sorry. We're not friends anymore. But
I'll come back anytime.
Absolutely. When are you going to start a podcast? Huh? Do something. Come on. Talk about all the knowledge that you have.
Man, I don't know about all that. Talk about plants. About this tie right here.
Sweet. Anything that, you know, is around.
Exactly.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a Why Are You Laughing podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Caleb, thank you, brother.
Thank you.
And go check out his EP called Southbound. It's on all major platforms, I believe. That's right, right, Caleb?
Yeah, it's okay. Everywhere.
And you can find him at Caleb Murray on everything. Mm-hmm. And this podcast will be out tonight, and I'm going to be sending him the link, so hopefully he can share it on his page. But thank you all for tuning in again, and we are clear.